Testing 1, 2, 3. Sounds good. Is Commissioner Erickson coming in remotely? Okay.
I hear you loud and clear.
All right, good. Okay, so we have a quorum. I'm Mike Noblet, current chairman of the board. I convene the January 12th, 2023 meeting of the Board of South Whidbey Fire and EMS. At this point, I'll request an approval of the agenda as presented.
So moved.
The motion is a second.
Second.
Motion second to approve the approval of the agenda. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
At this point, we're at item number 3 on the agenda, public input. Sir, for the record, sir.
Harry Dye, Deputy Chief of Operations here at South Whidbey Fire. Ladies and gentlemen, we received word this afternoon that our brothers and sisters at Clallam County Fire District 3 in SWIM early this morning lost one of their captains who passed away while on duty. Apparently it was medical causes. However, just due to the sad event, I'd like to request a moment of silence in his honor. Thank you.
Thank you. That's always distressing whenever that happens. So at this point, and by the way, any good vibrations and thoughts to the gentleman's family, I think you can pass that on that we did recognize. So at this point, we have item 4 on the agenda, which is the consent, which are items for the public's purpose, are items that are routine in nature that have been reviewed by the board and don't require specific board action for any item. So at this point, this includes approval of minutes from the regular meeting of December 8th, 2022, finance officer reports, the budget position report, treasurer's report, and the monthly vouchers. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Can I raise some points before we approve it?
Commissioner Erickson.
For the minutes from December 8th, I would just like the record to show that one of the public members of the public who spoke, the last name is CYR, Craig Sear. So I'd like to update that. And then for one of the other public speakers, an individual was identified as a board member, but I believe that he was a water board commissioner. And I think that's just a point to update as well. I don't know if anybody else caught that.
And I would add that we need to amend that the minutes to show that Craig Sear, as Commissioner correctly identified the correct spelling, he is a member of the City Council of Langley. So we need to edit the minutes to show that. Any other change?
And then,
go ahead. Please go
ahead. I did have a question in regards to the budget, where there were a number of items under payroll where many individuals are listed for receiving payment, but there's a whole section of that's blank where there are no individuals listed. And I was just curious if that was an error or why there was nothing listed for that section.
Commissioner, could you direct us to where you're referring to?
Give me one second, please.
And this is going to be under the budget position or,
It's right around the payroll section I'll try and give you a page number in a moment.
So is this under the budget position report or somewhere else?
It wouldn't be a budget position.
Okay, I'm just.
Maybe under the check register. Is that what you're referring to?
I think that's it. It's seemingly, there's a few things that are kind of different from what we've looked at in the past.
So we've got documented as treasurer's report, or do we have the, I think there's another document in here with.
The check register on page 2, is that what you're referring to? Where it has 2 of the employees' names and then the rest of the payroll, their names are blank?
I think so. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble pulling it up.
So, Kat, is which document are we you're looking at?
The check register.
Yes, it is page 2. It is the register. So, is that not part of this section of the agenda?
So, the check register is that is included with the voucher approvals that you approve. So, those are all of the vouchers for the month. So, the check register is just listing out every single charge for the month. Where mm-hmm. you see the names at? Those aren't payroll. Those are claims. So for like boot reimbursement, if you see on the side, it's for different reimbursements. So all the payroll, the employees' names are not added, but if they do have like a reimbursement or something, then you'll see their names in there.
So it is page 2, it is the check register, and I see payroll. And at the top of the page, it says James Zimmerman. And then following that, there are items for somewhere between $1,000 and $3,000, but no claimant is listed.
Yep. So payroll, if you see the type where James Zimmerman's at, the type of that is mm-hmm. a claim. And a claim means basically we're paying a bill. And then underneath that, right after James Zimmerman, the type of that is going to be payroll. So the following items where you do not see a name, those are all payroll. I don't know if that makes sense.
I'm sorry, because if you say payroll, then that sounds like someone's getting paid, but there's no person being paid or any description. It's just a dollar amount.
Yes.
And a check number.
Yes.
So where is that money going?
Those are all the employees, their payroll.
Would you like to see their names added to that in the future?
Are you just trying to see funds getting paid?
I'm used to seeing like we as commissioners get our payment for attending meetings, and I'm used to seeing volunteers as well as the crew getting paid, but are we not listing people's names anymore?
The old reports that you guys used to get, those were, they were not manufactured from actually Springbrook. Those were all manipulated from like an Excel spreadsheet. So this is just the way that the report kind of puts out the information. There's probably a way that I can manipulate it to add the names in, just typically for public documents, some payroll items, the names are just removed. And you might see like their transaction number or their employee ID, but their names typically are removed. But that's something that if you want to see their names, I could try to call Springbrook and see what we could do to that report.
Maybe it's just that it's listed in a different document type, and that's where I'm stating that we've had this information presented in different ways. But I do know that on a monthly basis, when we look at our finances, we have seen who's getting paid how much.
Yeah. I know all those, I was looking back, all those reports were, they were exported to like an Excel spreadsheet, and that's kind of how they did it before. But this, that was from the BIAS software.
Okay.
All these reports probably look a bit different.
Okay, that is correct. It was concerning to see a whole lot of payroll and then no specific, but who does it go to in that? That's all.
Okay.
Those are my primary questions.
So for clarification for this member of the board, if we were looking at check register on page 2, you're saying all of the items below the James Zimmerman have no name associated. Is that's the issue?
Right. Yes. Sounds like that's how that comes out of the payroll software. We could look into Kat can look into whether or not we can add those or have those added in if you'd like, and we can get back to you.
So help me for discussion. If we have the check payroll below the James Zimmerman line, that's going to be somebody in the system? I mean,
yeah, those are all the paychecks for employees. And for whatever reason, it probably some privacy thing or something drops the names out.
Yeah, you want to make sure if there's any concern about privacy or anything of that nature, we need to know about it. You know, the bottom line is that you all are on top of it. We just want to make sure that the request for information does not endanger anybody either within the district or without the district.
Yeah, but and I also understand the desire to not have it go into a bunch of John Does that, you know, ensure these are actually real paychecks that are going to real people and for the right amount.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, good. Commissioner Erickson, that's good. Good catch. Appreciate it. Commissioner Towers, any questions, thoughts?
No, I've had my question was answered.
Okay, at this point then, I don't remember if we had an agenda, a motion on the floor for that, so I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
So moved. Oh, I'll second it.
Motion and second. All those face say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. At this point, we have a member update, Chief.
Okay, so a new volunteer member again. This is Tracy Haney. Hopefully I'm saying your name, last name correct, Tracy. So Tracy has been through the vetting process and application process and the physical capabilities test and everything to become a firefighter with us. And we'll be starting in the Fire Academy here starting in the beginning of February, if approved. She's a neighbor of our Fire Station 31. And is excited to come on board. This is Tracy, if you don't mind standing up.
Hi.
This is Tracy.
Well, congratulations. Always ask the question, what inspired you to get involved?
I watched you earlier. the thing that inspired me most to get involved is actually having firsthand interactions with fire and EMS. I have a medically needy daughter who is in congestive heart failure. So she's stable and good.
I know, it's one thing if somebody's my vintage to have that, but to have somebody of your daughter's vintage, my heart's out to you and her.
Thank you. But we've watched numerous times the compassion that teams have given us. And I very much would like to be able to give that back to our community.
Oh, thank you. Now, if we can just reproduce you many times over, we'd be real happy.
Give it 20 years. I got two little ones who are very excited for this. So,
oh, good. That's good. Well, thank you for stepping up the plate. And I'm speaking for one member of the board. You make my job a lot easier.
Thank you very much.
So we look forward to good reports. So
I hope to do that.
Tracy, it's a lot of work, but it's worth it.
This guy has 32 years?
35. 35, I think.
35 as a volunteer. So
big footsteps to follow.
Nah, you'll do well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
At this point, is there anybody else from the public who would like to talk to? Wax forth, going once, going twice. We'll go to unfinished business. I don't see any section of five, section seven, excuse me, new business. At this point, annually every year we reorganize for who is become the chair. And
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I interrupt you for just one moment? If we could just get a motion to approve Tracy as a volunteer.
Okay. I'm going to ask the board if there's a motion to approve Tracy Haney as a new volunteer.
Absolutely. So moved.
And seconded.
And I could third it, but I don't think that's allowed. So all those in favor say aye.
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 Boy, that's the loudest aye I've heard in a long time. Ayes. And going to new business, every year, the first meeting of the new year, the board reconstitutes itself. And just before I walked in, Commissioner Towers said, well, he didn't want to start halfway through the meeting. And if you still feel that way, I'll continue with the meeting and then we can vote you in at the end of the meeting.
That's fine with me.
Okay. And I promise I will not do what they did in Brasilia last Sunday and try to keep it going, nor what happened 2 years ago on January the 6th. I promise I won't do that. So when he takes over, I'll be able to move on the next meeting. So at this point, new business, sole source declaration, chief, staff report.
So this is a sole source declaration for purchase of washing machines for bunker gear called extractors. So a sole source declaration is obviously if there's a sole provider locally that we would use for a particular item, they will have a sole source declaration and we'll approve them as who we're going to use. This allows us to not go through a bidding process when there's really only one person that one entity that we'll be purchasing from. They can meet the needs. So what we'll be asking for is a motion to approve Unimac for sole source for the extractor. There's a letter here.
Right.
In the board packet for you.
So questions of the chief on this? Well, go ahead, Commissioner Towers.
These are the same extractors we've been buying previously, I believe.
I believe so, yeah.
So there's no other vendor that does this, or it meets our needs, and they you've approved this as far as there won't be some other vendor that will say, hey, we should have been included.
Correct. That's the concept. These are the Unimac is the authorized service and warranty provider solely for the state of Washington.
Okay.
So,
okay. Yeah. So any more questions of the chief on this? If not, how about a motion to approve Unimac? Yeah, Unimac as the sole source vendor for our washing machines.
So moved.
So moved.
Seconded. We'll get this down. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
I think we might have a third eye or fourth eye in the background there. Mm-hmm. So at this point, we move to item C, which is resolution 2023-01. Chief.
Okay, we'll pass this to Kat.
This is just the annual investment resolution. Every year we have to provide Island County with a resolution stating who your investment investment officers are. So for the duration of 2023, for this resolution, we are proposing Chief Walsh and myself as investment officers who are allowed to transfer and make withdrawals to and from our different funds with Island County.
Questions of our finance officer?
None from me.
Sounds like this is a required thing on the part of the county, and we do this every year?
Yes.
Okay. No further questions. How about a motion?
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion and second. All those in favor of resolution 2023-01 say aye.
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 None opposed. I like that unanimity. Okay, so now we're going to, memorandum of understanding for step increases. Chief, presentation.
Okay, so there are three different memorandum of understandings or MOUs with the IAFF local 5212. The first one is regarding step increases. And essentially, this is clarifying language in the contract. There was some confusion over when you would receive step increases, which a step increase is after a certain amount of time you receive an increase in your pay, generally after a year or after a probationary period. So we just clarified some of that language, particularly that it would be a year after they started, and that how we would handle step increases in regards to performance evaluations and extensions of probation. So we just clarified the language in that. You can see a matrix here that shows from their hiring date after 12 months, they would move to step two. What it's also demonstrating is that if someone were to have their probation extended, then their step increase occurs at the end of that probationary period. Their next step increase would occur 2 years or 24 months from their hiring date, rather than pushing out their step increase in perpetuity.
So the step increases will always be at the same from the hiring date.
Exactly. Step increases. Thank you. Step increases are tied to the hiring date. That's easier. And it's easier from a bookkeeping standpoint. I also think it's fair to the employee, because just because they get their probation extended doesn't mean they should then be pushed back for the rest of their career, in my thinking.
Agreed.
Questions to the chief on this? Commissioner Erickson?
I'm just curious about the discussion to come to this. It seems pretty standard, but if you just want to describe the process that brought us to this MOU.
You know, we wrote this a few months ago, but as I recall, we had someone's probation get extended, which is not uncommon. It's basically, if they're struggling with something, we might extend the probation for some period of time until they receive a satisfactory evaluation. I believe that's what had happened. And then we discussed, you know, when would they get their next step increase? Do we need to reset their kind of record with finance to where they receive it a year from the successful completion? Or do we, you know, keep it going in line with their hiring date? I believe that that was exactly what initiated this conversation, although there may have been other aspects to it. Hopefully that helps.
My assumption is that the union would like to see this approved, that they're in agreement with the fairness of this and following along with the hiring date.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So when we develop a memorandum of understanding, we do this through something called the Labor Management Committee. And we sit together and create these types of documents through constructive dialogue. These are actually written by the IAF local or the union. And we'll sit down at the table and go back and forth until we come to terms we agree with. A vast majority of the time that's done amicably, and there's no further need for any escalation of negotiations. But that's how all of these came to be. So by the time these get in front of you, they're totally agreed upon by the labor body and management.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? I reviewed the document. It seems fair. And as long as the local is in line with it, it favors it, and it's something that we can accommodate in our budgeting. I think it's a good situation. So I'll entertain a motion to approve this memo of understanding for step increases.
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
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 None opposed. unanimous approval here. Now we're going to memorandum of understanding for MERP. Sounds like a rock group or something, the MERPs.
It is. No, it's so sorry about the large number of acronyms. So MERP is, as you see on this MOU, is the Medical Expense Reimbursement Plan. This is a program that a lot of fire departments through the state take advantage of. And essentially what they do is they're able to invest money on a monthly basis into a medical expense reimbursement plan. And then at the time of retirement, you get a sort of a fixed benefit. This is of no cost at this time to the district, with the exception of whatever small amount of processing occurs through payroll. They did want to have this in their contract. Again, it's just adding it to the contract. So the language is in there that they're doing this. We're not really tied to it, except that it says we will facilitate them being able to make that investment. There is also an employer contribution amount called out in this MOU, which is set at zero. This is language that's undoubtedly been used with other agencies, and that would allow for them at some time in the future, if they desired to negotiate for a contribution from the employer, that would be already in the contract that we could do that. At this time, that again is set to zero. So the union is not asking for anything from the district at this point, other than to add this language to the contract.
Questions of the chief? Commissioner Towers?
No.
Commissioner Erickson?
No questions.
So it seems reasonable to this guy, so I'll entertain a motion to approve the memo of understanding for the MERP.
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Now we're going to another MOU, Member of Understanding for LEOF, what, law enforcement and firefighters group?
So this is, again, language that's being added to the contract with no cost to the district. And it's also, we're required by state law to enroll our firefighters into LEF, law enforcement officers and firefighters retirement program. It's just like PERS, if you've heard of that, public employees retirement system. There are some districts or cities such as Seattle that have a different program, but everyone else essentially contributes to LEF. This is just something that was important, again, for the union to have in the contract. With all of these, our labor attorney has vetted these as well and has no issue with them. This is, again, just adding that language into the contract.
Questions of the chief? Seems straightforward to me. Commissioner Erickson, wherever you are.
No questions.
Okay. If no further questions, entertain a motion to approve the memo of understanding for the LEOFF.
Motion.
Motion. I hear, and is there a second?
Seconded.
Motion second. All those in favor say aye.
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 None opposed? It passes. And now we're going to Section G, the Langley Water District Report. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so, as you're aware, as the commissioners are aware, we had a visit from representatives of the Freeland Water District, which we discussed earlier while reviewing the minutes at our last board meeting. They brought forward essentially three concerns at that time. And I had told you at that meeting that I would return with a report on those issues. So I put together a very basic report on this, which I'll deliver to you now. Initially, right afterwards, I started to do kind of a deep dive into the situation and realized that probably wasn't entirely necessary. These are pretty easy points for us to respond to. If there is any desire to go deeper into it, there's a lot of materials out there that we could look into. The first concern, I'm sorry, Chairman, did you have a question?
No, go ahead. Okay.
The first concern that was brought forth was on water usage reports. There was a concern that they were not receiving water usage reports from us. And what those are is whenever we use a hydrant and take any amount of water, particularly a significant amount of water out of their system, we report that to the water systems. And what that helps them to do is they have record of that for the state. So at the end of the year, the state says you're missing 10,000 gallons of water. We need to figure out where it is. They'll know where that water went through our usage reports. So I circled back actually during the meeting, Chief Nye and Chief Beck both got into their computer systems and looked and said, well, we know we've been doing the reports. So Chief Nye maintains a water usage spreadsheet for the hydrants in Freeland. And in fact, for all of the hydrants that we use, which is submitted quarterly to those water districts. At the end of quarter three, 2022, we had submitted 11 usage reports totaling 11,200 gallons for our district. We're unaware of any water usage, which was not reported, although of course it's always a possibility. We will continue to be diligent on that. And we've brought it up, I believe, in the last officers meeting as well, to remind folks to ensure that we are reporting any water usage to them.
Before you go to the next section,
yes, sir.
Questions of the chief on this?
Here. The next section you're referring to would be, I'm looking at the water report.
It's titled the Freeland Water Report. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So when you say next section, did we just talk about section two?
We're just moving into section two now.
Okay.
Before you,
I'll save my question for the end.
Okay. So that's not on section one, Commissioner Erickson?
No.
Okay. How do we document the amount of water that is being used for when we open a fire hydrant? Is this something that is a normal process that so the Freeland Water would feel comfortable if we say it's whatever number of gallons, 11,200, that's a legitimate amount?
Yes.
Okay. I will, no further questions on that one. I'll go ahead to number two, hydrant use.
Okay. Hydrant use and water system joint training. So the next request was, concern was that we were not operating the hydrants in a manner that was safe for the water system. That, of course, is always a concern for us. Water hammer is something that's part of the training for all firefighters through the earliest stages of their fire academy. And water hammer is essentially, if you shut off a hydrant or anything too fast, that can create a hydraulic impact on the system and damage it. It's not uncommon for severe water hammer cases to cause damage to water systems. With the flow of water that we're dealing with 5-inch hoses and the like, it's a significant amount of pressure that can be generated. We do train on that, and we do train to shut hydrants off slowly. As far as specifically doing joint training with the Freeland Water District, I initially contacted the Freeland Water District through July and I think into June via telephone, and on July 15th requested specifically training dates in August and forwarded that project onto our training chief, Chief Dilley. He contacted them again on July 18th and August 17th, and again several times via telephone. Those were all written email communications. And have been unable to get a date for them to be able to conduct that training for us. We'll continue to do that training on our own. And I dove into some of the details of that water system so we can start to provide that to our staff as well. And again, we contacted, or Chief Dilley, I should say, contacted the Freeland Water District again today via email requesting to do some joint training with them.
Do we get any response from all these inquiries or nothing? No.
Some occasionally we have not been able to nail down a date with them that would work.
So do they even acknowledge our inquiries?
Some of them. I'm not sure lately. The early ones we did. So okay. I'm seeing no, not lately.
All right. Okay. So the number three.
Okay. Any questions other than that on two? Okay. The third point was another concern which had happened more recently, which was a main water line failure on Pleasant View Lane. So on the night of November 5th, 2022, there was a water main failure on Pleasant View Lane in Freeland. This failure did occur during the same time we were fighting a fire on Tyler Lane just outside of Freeland. We filled water tenders for that fight out of the Freeland water system. Although I cannot determine whether our actions contributed to that water main failure, I can confirm that there have been previous water main failures on Pleasant View Lane. Pleasant View Lane was studied and determined to be a geologically unstable hillside, which is prone to such failures. That was a study that was, I believe, paid for and hired by the Freeland Water District. I don't have a copy of that here. If you were interested, I could obtain one. On 1/15/21, this was an example of such failures of the water main on Pleasant View. On 1/15/21, South Whidbey Fire EMS responded to a Pleasant View Lane for one of these water main failures, which was flooding homes. On that response, a sinkhole opened up in the street beneath our fire engine. The engine and crew was saved by the quick actions of the engineer, Eldon Baker, who, when the road began to give way beneath him, accelerated to safety out of the sinkhole. So when I went back to review any previous calls we had had at that location, that was the first one that came up. Anecdotally, there have been a number of other failures on that street. If our actions in operating the fire hydrant, which was at the most remote part of the system from the failure, contributed to the failure, it was likely a straw that broke the camel's back scenario. South Whidbey Fire EMS will continue to work to train our staff in the best practices for hydrant operation and to foster positive relations with all water districts in our area.
Commissioners, question of the chief on this item. In general, I don't have specific questions about any of these items, but I do make a statement. I'm disappointed in the people with the Freeland Water District for coming into a public meeting when this is information that should have been contacted to you, Chief, and to address the issue as opposed to doing a public, I'll just say a public event, because we all should be working together, and that's been your mode of operation since you've been here. Not to say any of these are not legitimate concerns, but it's something that can be addressed, should have been addressed in direct communication to you and to find solutions. But that's just my two cents on it. Any other discussion points from the commissioners to staff on this? So you've given us a report. We don't have to do anything, right?
Not unless you want me to dig deeper and get further information on it. But I think I would like to just continue to try to work with them and do the best job we can.
I concur as one member of the board. We need to keep the lines of communication open, but I don't want to see South Whidbey Fire and EMS be a fall guy for another district's, another government entity's issues. Any other questions, commissioners? So now we go to item H under new business, annual update.
Okay. Chief Dilley, cue up the slideshow if you would. Okay,
that's the fun part.
So this is a pretty basic annual summary, which usually these take a little while after the end of the year to generate. Next month, we'll be doing the financial report for the end of year. And I will hope at that point to come back with a more full written annual summary. But I just want to go over some of the highlights. There's a lot of fun stuff here. Okay. My remote's not working.
Got nice graphics up here. Nice background.
Okay, looks like it's going now. So first of all, just a brief call breakdown for 2022. We had 2,657 calls for service. Most of those, if you see across the bottom, it's kind of hard to read, but there's a color coding for this pie chart. The vast majority of these calls, 75.88% or 2,016, were EMS and rescue type calls. Oftentimes, fire departments will combine a number of the remaining call types to come up with a fire type response of somewhere between 10 and 20%. We've broken it down in a little bit more detail, and you'll see that just 1.84% of those calls were true fires. 105 of those were hazardous conditions, which could be anything from smoke conditions to hazardous materials type calls, which are more likely. So that could be CO monitor alarming. It could be a fuel leak, could be a propane leak, any of those types of things. If you look then into the green section, we had 164 false alarms or 6.17%. That's not unusual. A high number of our calls are generated through alarm systems being triggered due to any number of reasons. We had 3.09% of the calls were severe weather, which I think is a pretty significant number. As we'll see a little bit later on, it shouldn't be a huge surprise. We did have a number of calls generated just based off of the wind event that we had back in November. We had 102 calls, which were categorized as other. We are able to drill down more deeply into the specifics of those calls, but those categories are not very telling. They're things like explosions. Well, they may be explosions, they may be not. It could be a variety of different things that occur, but that's a number of random different call types. So marine rescues specifically, Captain Gideon, who is working with our marine rescue program, put together a lot of information already for the call volume for the past 3 years. You'll see we had a little bit of an uptick here in search for person in the water, and the others were down a little. So we're at 43 marine type calls for 2022, which is right in line with where we were at in 21. Some of the significant incidents, and I picked three that were kind of standouts, were a passenger plane crash into Mutiny Bay on 9-4, which you all are familiar with. We had a large turnout for that. Chief Nye was the incident commander, and a number of our staff that are here tonight actually responded on that call and did an excellent job. We had, I'm not sure how many different agencies involved, but it was about a dozen different agencies, and we put together a debrief for that incident as well. And I think there were some lessons learned. We had a 2,500 square foot woodworking shop fire on 12-2, which is that photograph you see in the lower right-hand corner. That call actually came in as a shed fire, so I don't think we had a really huge turnout. I think we had like between 7 and 9 firefighters on it. You'll see that it's fully involved in flames. We don't like to see that. We like to get it out a little bit sooner. Unfortunately, in this one, the owner had decided to spend a significant amount of time attempting to extinguish it himself. And so that put us kind of behind the eight ball on that one. But again, the crews did a great job with limited staffing. And then we had a significant wind event from 11.4 to 11.7 that generated 87 calls for service and two structure fires, one of which actually had a little bit of a rekindle, which we don't like to talk about, but it does happen. So those were, both of those structure fires were generated by generators which were too close to the building, I believe, in both of those cases. You see the 87 calls for service, and that actually doesn't really touch what we actually did and what the crews did in those days. They were out just constantly going from incident to incident and clearing roadways. And the reason that we do that is to keep those roadways open for our staff to be able to get to emergencies. That's the biggest reason. Here's a quick snapshot of call volume since 2019. We had a bit of an uptick last year. And this year we were at, again, 2657, which is showing an upward trend over the last several years.
Chief, a question back.
Yes, sir.
To the last, we were 300 or so more from 20 to 21 and 200 or so less this year. Is there any, have done any analysis to see why we've gone down from, because I mean, if you look at this sort of a trend line from 19, 20 to 22, but you have the anomaly of 21. Is there any?
Yeah, I'm not certain what the exact call types are on those yet. I haven't a deep dive, but I suspect, I'm interested to see what other agencies come up with, because kind of my thought is we had most agencies had a downward tick for a large period of 2020 due to COVID.
Right.
And it kind of felt like people were making up for lost time in 2021, which some of the medical studies have shown. Yeah. And in fact, they were, because people were staying home that should have been going in and getting treatment.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And now they're sicker.
Okay. So that's fine.
Yeah. That's just a guess. Our records manager, Vicky Lang, actually, she sent me some of these reports, and then I just had noticed that one of them actually goes all the way back to 1984 for call volume that she sent, which is kind of cool. So in like the last 5 minutes before we started this meeting, Chief Dilley was able to work his magic with PowerPoint and display this visually. So you can see this is going all the way back to 1984, the call trend. So steady climb. Interesting to note that somewhere in the early aughties there in 2005 or so, we had another little uptick and then drop. So it's not entirely unprecedented. Pretty quiet here in the mid 80s. So one of my tasks for this year was to improve our fourth seat coverage, or improve the amount of time that we have four people on duty at a time here at station 36, a minimum of four. Part of the reason for that, of course, is that we have a two in, two out, allowing two people to go into a structure fire and two to remain outside for safety and to meet state law. You all asked around September, could I please start to kind of trend this data and have it in a format that we can see the direction we're going rather than just report each month? So that's why this is just going back to September. I do recall that prior to that, we were somewhere around 30%, but we are slowly trending up on that. We're up to 50% for December. And I believe that's going to continue to rise, except we're going to send three folks off to State Fire Academy, and we're about to ship six or seven to the local fire academy. So for the next few months, these numbers may not look quite as rosy, but then they should come back up strong in spring. That said, yesterday I was here at a station 36, went in the day room, and it was packed in there. I said, God, how many guys you got on right now? And Blake Beninati said, Chief, we got a problem. I said, well, what's the problem, Blake? He said, well, we got too many people. We don't have enough beds for tonight. So what are you talking about? So we have eight on tonight. So we decided we would, for the first time in known history, staff two stations last night. This was that after that, I said, hey, let's go downstairs and get a picture. So this was the crew that was on along with the duty chief of the day, Chief Dilly. And then, like I said, we had at least two more volunteers come in that night, and they were able to staff both station 31 and 36. So it's kind of a historic occasion.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Pretty exciting.
It's more than exciting. It's great.
Yeah. And then this is the other one that you all had asked that we start to track in a way that we could trend it. And so again, that's starting in September. The numbers across the bottom are just the number of volunteers we have. And so that allows us to see, well, what if half the department quit, but you got two more? Well, so this tracks how many we actually had at the time. So we've got an upward trend, slowly ticking, not huge numbers, but a steady climb. In 2022, we brought on new administrative personnel, myself replacing Rusty Palmer after 12 years here at South Whidbey, new training and EMS chief, Joseph Dilly, replaced Wendy Moffat after 6 years on the job. She's still here locally, so we see her at conferences and things, which is cool. But really, really happy to have Chief Dilly here. And then Kat is appointed the fifth and final finance officer of the year. And so she's doing great, and hope to keep her, although she'll be taking a little break here in the near future to deliver the newest member of Swiffy's team. Okay. It was our first full year with full-time firefighters, so we've had a little bit of a change here, sorry. But these were the best photos I could get, so finished year one. The training report, so we had 7 Swiffy members now enrolled in the this is 2022 Fire Academy. We had 7 members. I think we have seven again going in this year. EMT Academy, we had 6 members go through that from Swiffy, and we put that on ourselves, hosted it here, and went really cool. It was neat to see that. The total training hours were more than 7,599 hours of training. I say more than because we're working to do a better job of tracking all the training we do. The crews are just training all the time. And so it's always going to be a challenge to get them to get over to the computer and put that in and record that you did that so that we can show folks how much training we're doing. We're approved to host National Fire Academy courses in-house in the coming year, although we didn't host them this year. We were approved to do so. We hosted.
What does that mean, hosting the national?
So we can hold courses that are important to the firefighters and the fire service to get certifications. So
these
here
are certifiable. The courses result
certified
people
courses.
That take them then get whatever certifications they need, because it's you're up to the standards to do that.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And we hosted Island County DEM cert training. We also hosted a FEMA course here. And then Swiffy, one of our members attended a hazardous materials course at the Training Center for Domestic Preparedness, which was cool. And I went through hazmat tech training. Some technology updates. We're finishing up our migration to Microsoft 365, which is always going to have some bumps in the road. And so we're getting there. We're almost there. We segued to IS outsource as our IT service provider. We brought on a software called Social Archiver, which lets us better meet the demands of public records retention rules and also be able to produce public records for public records requests. We did have an email data breach, which we are in the very final stretches of working through with our insurance company and law firms. We have improved data communications on our fire engines. So Chief Beck, don't ask me to explain what he did, but put some more tech into the engines so they have better internet coverage when they're out on the street and able to get the information they need from dispatch.
Commissioners, any questions on this part of the report?
No, so far, I think it's pretty clear.
So Chief, I mean, basically these technology updates are going to hopefully ensure us that we don't have all this, the Russians hacking in like they have been.
Yes.
And so this data, what is it, IS or IO outsource, that's their business. I mean, we go from having one person on staff to having multiple people on, basically under contract to reach out to with various expertise.
Right. And there are going to be some hiccups as we transition and they get used to our systems and we get things set up so they can manage them. But they have specialists in all different areas and did a great job coming on site and working with us to get things set up. And then that Microsoft 365 migration also will do a good job of protecting our data as working through Microsoft servers rather than our own.
Good job.
Yeah, okay. We had Chief Beck here. He could explain in greater detail, but he's on vacation. So this was just a slide that, again, records manager Vicky Lang put together, and this is demonstrating the increase in public records requests over time. This just goes back to 2014 and just continues to climb. So public records requests are obviously on the rise, as anyone from Langley would understand. I think they've been the subject of several studies by a gentleman who does public records requests in a prolific manner and then ends up in court with them. So we're trying to stay out of those scenarios. In fun and exciting news, we got a new logo and uniform shirts with Nikki and Kat modeling those. You can see this cat's cracking up because I asked them to do this like totally unexpected. So but I think those look really good. And so this was something that the teams that we put together to design these totally came up with and we're really excited about. And we have more changes coming up with the new budget. So as we segue into 2023, we'll be transitioning more to blue rather than gray with the sweatshirts and everything. We got a new website put together. And I think that's looking good and working pretty smoothly. We're continuing to take advantage of it in more ways. And this company put out a video earlier in the month talking about some of their exciting changes they're going to have. We're going to be able to take advantage of this technology more and more and put more forms on here and things like that.
So this is an outside vendor that's managing our website?
It is. It's called Streamline. And really, this is one that I think Chief Nye had told us about. And they specialize in websites for special districts. That's what they do. So it's kind of perfect for us. And we're able to put, as you know, the board documents on there very easily and all those things. And again, we don't have to worry about managing a server and we don't have to worry about if something broke. We can put pictures on it pretty easily. That was one of the challenges with our in-house hosted one, as we were saying, hey, we can't update pictures and stuff. So, and then some of the exciting changes coming up for 2023, we're going to have, as the board had approved, three additional full-time firefighter positions. We're already on board, and that's part of us having that great staffing last night. We have a new engine that's been purchased and getting prepped for delivery. Same with our aid unit. our MERVs. We've had those for some time. It's been a long process, but we're going to get those rolled out. New full-time recruits are going to be attending Washington State Fire Academy for the first time. We have a potential consolidation of stations 32 and 33, which we discussed through the budgeting and strategic planning process. And we have a WSRB rating coming up this year. And so that's an opportunity for us to, again, to do some introspection and see what we can do better as an agency to try to keep those ratings up.
So, Chief, on the potential consolidation of 32 and 33, you use the term potential. Does that mean, what does that mean for the public that might be listening in?
So what that means is we've discussed our desire to consolidate those stations for a number of different reasons through the budgeting process. That's not going to happen overnight. We need to explore property options. We need to explore what the building's going to look like, go through all the planning stages. So as we go through that, it may or may not be able to occur in 2023. As we know, these things can take a while. I think Central Whidbey took 5 years to build their station. We don't want to repeat that, but it might take more than 12 months.
I think so.
Yeah. So that's what I got for the update. And again, I'll have more to follow in a written summary of that. Thank you.
Commissioners, any general questions on this topic?
No questions, but it's nice to see some upward trends on a lot of things. It's, seeing our volunteer numbers increase, seeing our chances of getting four-man shift increasing, and actually manning two stations is a pretty historic moment. That's definitely a first.
Well, if Commissioner Towers says it's a first, it's a first. That's really good news. When you told me that earlier today, there was a real buoyancy in Chief Walsh's voice when he shared that information. So I like to say my hat's off to everybody involved, because when somebody dials that last digit of 911, they don't want any excuses. They just want us there. And if we've got two stations open and working, then the response is going to be that much faster. And that's good. That's good. So go to item eight. I don't see any announcements. Item nine, got comments from us, commissioners. Commissioner Erickson? Commissioner Towers? I do have one announcement. On Monday, Chief Walsh, Chief Dilley, and I had a meeting with Whidbey Health, and it was interesting. It's something that it evolved out of the commissioners meeting that we held with the four districts back in September, I think it was. One of the major issues that we were concerned about at the time and still is, was what's going to happen with Whidbey Health and their ambulance service. And we've all heard about how they were down to like 3 days cash or something like that on hand in March. So Chief Walsh reached out to his contacts, and then it resulted in a meeting that it was interesting when we got there. My objective was simply to be able to have a conversation with their interim CEO and to share with our concerns about, we don't want to be sitting where all of a sudden the hospital district says, hey, we're going to get out of the ambulance business. And the whole idea was, how can we know what their thought processes are so that to serve our part of the county, we're not caught flat-footed. So I had an agenda to go in there, and it was interesting. They said, well, we're going to give you a tour. So we got the tour, the cook's tour of the hospital system. And, it was very interesting. I mean, My wife was there about 4 or 5 years ago, and where she was having a broken femur is now offices. And it would have been a lot nicer in the single patient rooms that they have now. So we got the whole tour, and finally the most important part was at the end, meeting with the CEO, and there was two commissioners and our two chiefs and me. The general response, and Chief Wallace, you can chime in when I get done, that they, at this stage today, they have no desire to change what they're doing for their ambulance service. The interesting thing that I took away from is, one, they say it costs, for the amount of revenue they get per transport, they still have to contribute $6 million. So it's a revenue hole for them. They were basically letting us know that right now that's their business, that's their business plan, and that there's no nothing that we could pull out of them to say that there's any plans to cease and desist on their transport. Having said that, we never got behind the curtain to know really what's going on, what their thought processes are. It's always a concern because there are very few hospitals have ambulance service. So, but as of right now, it's an integral part of what they provide. The takeaway for me was that the interim CEO and would percolate to the top management and the two board members. I mean, one of them, Ron Wallen, has been, and he's chairman of the board right now, and he's been there for like 15 years. So there's a real history. Coming out of that, I wanted them to be absolutely clear that we want to be part of the process that they go through. And from that, they're looking at having some type of a meeting with the various fire districts, with the appropriate people, with the hospital districts. So we have some discussion about, is there ways, as I like to say, are we rowing in the same direction? And there was concern on our part, do we know what their goals are and where they are, so that we, can there be some economies of service that we're not doing right now, because none of the hospital district nor this district is rolling in dollars. And if there's ways that we can make the end result better for the people we serve, then we're all for it. So it was a good meeting. I look forward to the follow up on that. Chief, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. It was an interesting meeting, and it was a good meeting in a lot of ways, and that we opened up the door for conversations, and they were keen to meet with the fire chiefs group as well and see what our concerns were and where we wanted to go. And they were also seemed keen on the idea of our ambulance that we've procured, transport ambulance we've procured, and making that an integral part of the system going forward. So that was kind of a block for us previously. So I hope to be able to move forward in a way that best serves the community.
Well, related to that, the longtime head of Whidbey Health's ambulance service has retired. So, there was, as I understand, there was zero interest in having any involvement with speaking for SWIFI, and that party's retired. So that's a good sign. May I ask, Chief, you had a meeting with your fellow chiefs the next day or this week, and was this... How did this play with your fellow chiefs?
Yeah, so that was on the agenda, and they were all very interested in that and interested in getting together and have that meeting. So we'll be putting that together likely in the next month here.
Okay. And will we host it, or will probably a hospital would host it, because it'll be central. They would be more central.
I'd like to. I want to try to steer it that way.
Down here.
Yeah. I think like we have a great facility, great location. There might as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a good time for all. Okay, I'm going to go to the next page and see what we have here. Okay, item 10, we have an executive session, discuss personnel matters. This will be the board only. No specific action. There will possibly be one confirming action, but I'm assuming based on the information that I have, probably no more than a half hour. And then we'll come back. If we have any results, we'll report back to you from that. So let's adjourn for time certain till. Why don't we target for 10 after the hour? So please wait if you want to wait. You don't have to. Don't expect any earth-shattering actions. So we'll be adjourned for 25 minutes till 10 after the hour. So. Hey, are we recording?
We are.
Okay, we're recording. The board is returned from executive session where we reviewed a report that we had conducted to address a staff member's complaint about a hostile working environment against our fire chief. The conclusion from the investigator was that the various complaints were not supported by the facts. The investigator interviewed 23 people with the district. If you exclude the complainant, the chief, and me, 20 people with the district or have left the district provided a significant amount of information. The basic conclusion was that the allegations were not warranted by the information provided by the various people interviewed. I'm not going to present in public the name of the person raising the allegations, but suffice to say, they are not sustained. None of the allegations are sustained of a hostile work environment brought on by this fire chief. And as a result, the board will take no further action on this matter. We will arrange a meeting with the complainant to present the a copy of the report so that he or she knows the reasoning for our actions. But at this point, the board considers this matter closed and no further action will be taken. So at this point, that is all we have to report on that. I do want to take an item out of the sequence under the new business. Item A, we were going to do an election of the board chair. And at this point, in order for us to have a board chair other than me for 2023, I put that on the table for us to now vote for or nominate a new member to be our chair. So since technically I am chair, but I'm going to relinquish my chair responsibility right now and nominate Commissioner Towers to be the chairman of the board for the year 2023. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
There's a motion and a second. Do we want to have any speeches? No speeches.
Negative.
Negative.
I will try to fill you off shoes.
At this point, he's accepted it, I think. So all those in favor of appointing Jim Towers as our chair of the board for the year 2023, say aye.
Aye.
Well, now you got it. You're our main man.
Okay.
Are you going to do a good job, sir? I can guarantee. I am sure that you're going to do way better than I did. So I will gladly, and I don't have a gavel, so I won't give it to you, but you will now take my chair and I can put my feet up. So
yeah.
At this point, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn for the evening.
So moved.
Motion. Seconded.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Let's go home. Good job, everybody.